Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Potomac Perspective. I'm Neil Shapiro, head of communications at Stifel, joined as always by our chief Washington policy strategist, Brian Gardner. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Neil. Baseball season is off to an outstanding start, an unexpectedly good start.
Well, we're obviously not watching the same games. Obviously, you're not watching the Mets, I'm assuming.
I watched the Yankees sweep the Houston Astros, which was quite nice. And they kept it going last night in Arizona. So 5-0. As a baseball fan, what I'm enjoying more than anything else is kind of a new approach with the Yankees, a new approach at the plate. And this kind of, I think people sort of expected it, in terms of not swinging with uppercut as much anymore, not as being obsessed with the launch angle. And Oswaldo Cabrera did an interview following one of the first two games, and he was talking about how he's hitting so much more for average. And he said, yeah, you know, watch Juan Soto in spring training, and I learned so much from him just watching him in spring training and how he approaches his plate appearances, and he doesn't swing with as much of an uppercut, and he's trying to drive the ball. And I think Yankee fans who have been frustrated by the approach from the offense over the last couple of years, we're like, yeah, this is what we've been saying for a long time. And, you know, it's early, right? It's a very small sample size. But they are, it's cause for optimism. These are green shoots.
Yeah. Well, if you've been watching the Met games.
The green shoots of spring.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's been watching the Met games, you know, it's a similar approach, losing. it hasn't been pretty.
I was home for the holiday and caught a couple of innings. It was tough to watch.
Yeah, tough to watch. I mean, on the bright side for Met fans, and I know we're recording this on Tuesday, we're probably not going to lose for a couple of days because we're probably not going to be able to play because it's pretty bad weather. So you can't lose, you know, you can't lose the games that you don't play. That's sort of the Met fan philosophy of taking the Michael Jordan quote, you know, you miss all the shots you don't take. That kind of flipping it for the Met fan and being, if we don't play, we can't lose. So let's pray for rain. But as you say, it's early, but you know, it gets late early. It gets late quick out in Flushing. So we'll see. But congratulations on your Yankees. And I'm glad that you've had some fun to watch the Yankees, you know, to sort of fill your time while Congress is on Easter break. But that's coming to a close soon, right? They'll be back.
And I assume there's
a full agenda for them to go through.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot. It may not be as high profile as some of the things we've talked about in the past, but there are things on the upcoming agenda that investors and companies should be paying attention to. So, you know, the House passed TikTok legislation, which would force ByteDance to divest its U.S. subsidiary of TikTok.
And I know you're a big TikToker yourself.
I'm an influencer, Neil. So I, you know, I'm on all the different platforms.
Around these parts, you are definitely an influencer.
You're very kind. Mm. Senate Majority Schumer hasn't really talked about whether he would bring that up, when he's going to bring it up, but he has talked about other items on railroad safety, kind of a response to the train accident in East Palestine, Ohio last year. Cannabis banking, which we have talked about in the past. We haven't talked about in a while, but it might be coming back. So that could be on the agenda. Executive compensation, the clawback of executive compensation, especially for failed banks. You know, we've talked about the tax legislation before, the corporate tax bill. That could be back on the agenda. And of course, you know, rebuilding the Francis Scott Key Bridge outside of Baltimore and the foreign aid bill, which has been languishing for a while. That's all going to be back on the congressional agenda in the coming weeks. So it's going to be a busy few weeks.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, why don't we talk about some of the specifics in that list that you mentioned? Foreign aid, that seems to be something that always comes up. It seems to be somewhat confrontational. When do you think we could see a vote on it?
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to see one next week. I think House members will need to come back and have and the leadership will have to take temperatures to see where everybody is. But it's I think the foreign aid bill is important for two reasons. One, in and of itself, I think it's an important bill, providing support for Israel, Taiwan, Ukraine. I think it sends a message around the globe about U.S. involvement in global affairs, and that has long-term repercussions for the markets as well as just geopolitical concerns. So that's one part of it. And then because it is controversial and because there are going to have to be some kind of compromises to pass it, then you start talking about what sweeteners could be added to the bill. And I thought it was interesting the other evening, Speaker Johnson did an interview on Fox, and he floated adding legislation to block the Biden administration's moratorium on the exportation of LNG gas. And so I'm not convinced that that's going to be on the bill. I don't know that it gets enough Republican support. The conservatives who already are opposed to additional Ukraine funding, that may not be enough of them. And it may drive away Democratic support that they would need to pass the bill. People, Democrats who will not go against the administration. But at the same time, it's kind of interesting. I mean, we've been talking a little bit, you and I haven't talked about it as much, but certainly in the markets, you know, the LNG issue has been out there, and our colleagues on the Stifel Equity Research Platform have been talking about it. And this could be an add-on that is interesting.
Hmm. Do you view the foreign aid bill as a make or break moment for the speaker?
It could be. There is growing dissent on the right with Johnson, and really it would be whatever Republican is in that chair. It's not Johnson particular. It wasn't McCarthy particular. There is a group of Republicans who will never be satisfied with anything. And their whole reason for being is to create chaos, not to do anything productive. And so bringing up the foreign aid bill, which a lot of those the chaos caucus, which they oppose Ukraine funding, the foreign aid bill would just be an excuse for them to move against Johnson. Now, this time around, as opposed to the McCarthy removal, there may be some Democrats who vote for Johnson to keep him in the speaker's chair because they don't want further disruption because they didn't like the 3 weeks that went on back in October where nothing got done and all of Congress looked bad. So there may be enough Democratic support this time to save Johnson, but it's definitely lurking in the background. Maybe not even the background, maybe in the foreground lurking in plain sight.
Yeah, exactly. All right, going over some of the other items that you mentioned, that dramatic bridge collapse in Baltimore, I mean, that was just unbelievable. I guess the question becomes how much federal aid goes to that cleanup and, I guess, reconstruction, or, you know, how do you expect that to play out?
Well, just as an aside, you said dramatic. I actually happened to see it on the remnants when I was driving home for the holiday. I was nearby using the Inner Harbor Tunnel in Baltimore, and there's a portion of that roadway that's elevated high enough that you can see out to the remnants of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and so you could see the bridge and the ship there, and that is exactly the word that you used, Neil. Dramatic. That's what it is. When you see it, it really takes your breath away by the size and the scope of what happened. So first things first is clean up and reopening that channel so shipping can get in. There's limited access to the port for barges with low drafts that can access some of the shallower areas, but obviously not container ships yet. So first step is removal and reopening that port, which is important for the supply chain of the East, but pretty much the entire country, but especially the East, and then rebuilding. And There's going to be another split in Congress. Democrats will be fully supportive of funding a replacement structure. Republicans will be split. I think you see the establishment Republicans saying that Congress is and the federal government will pay a big portion of it. They haven't said what portion of it yet. And then you're going to have other conservatives who say, no, this is a Maryland issue. The bridge is totally within the boundaries of Maryland. It's not near a border to another state. So this isn't really interstate. This is a Maryland issue. Maryland should pay for it. At the end of the day, I suspect the federal government, if it doesn't pay 100%, is going to pay a hefty percentage of the replacement. But that's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean the funding is going to take a long time, the building of it. The funding debate will probably last through the most of this year, into the fall and right up to New Year's. The rebuilding will take multiple years.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so dramatic that it was all caught on camera, too. So you could see it all unfold. And it's kind of one of those things where you never in a million years imagine something like that happening. And then you see it unfold. And then every time you go over a bridge, you think, well, you know, it actually has happened.
Yes. I think one of the postmortems in the analysis that come to what happened, there's going to be a very close look at the protection of the stanchions for the bridge. Why were they insufficient to protect the structure from a ship in an area of commerce where that's so busy, where the risk to the structure is fairly high. And you know, on that trip that I was talking about, my holiday trip back to New York, I also went over the Verrazano Bridge. And it was one of the things I looked at as I was sitting in traffic getting on the Verrazano, how protected. And the Verrazano, the bases of the Verrazano are very well protected. For whatever reason, I don't think this bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, was as well protected. And I think that's going to be an issue that comes out and affects bridge building going forward.
Yeah. On a side note, have you ever been on the Verrazano on an extremely windy day?
Yep.
That's a pretty scary proposition.
I'll do you one better. Is the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, which connects Annapolis, Maryland to the Eastern Shore. It's referred to as one of the scariest bridges in America.
Yep.
The peak is quite high, and it is very windy. But when you're at the apex, the incline or decline is pretty steep, and you have this very open look at the bay. And there's actually a service out there for people who are apprehensive about driving over, that they will come get your car and drive it for you. Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's why you like the driving over the Golden Gate Bridge. It's so damn foggy. You forget that you're on the bridge. You can't really see that the water is right there. You just kind of, you know, think you're driving along because you can't really see much. But anyway, we've taken the podcast off into a whole nother direction. We've covered sports. We've covered a little travel and leisure. Back to Washington, though. All right. So we talked a lot about stuff happening when Congress comes back next week. There was some activity in Washington over the past few days while Congress was gone. There was this Community Reinvestment Act ruling that has some impact for a lot of our constituents. What do you make of that, Brian?
Yes. You know, on that, Neil, it's kind of in line with a theme we've talked about going back to the beginning of the year, that 2024 is a year where a lot of the policy action is going to be with the regulatory agencies as they seek to finish up the Biden administration's agenda before the election. And this ties into that. I mean, this is the revised Community Reinvestment Act regs were implemented a couple of months ago, and the banking industry has sued, arguing that the regulators, the agencies, went beyond what the original statute provides. And there's other litigation related to other regs out there. We're just going to stick on the CRA for now, but there's ongoing litigation against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, on credit card issues, on late charge issues. So there's a lot of litigation revolving around the agencies, and investors should pay attention to these. But on CRA, I think it's important really because of bank merger and acquisition activity, not the rule itself. The rule itself is obviously a compliance issue for banks, but it doesn't change a bank's income statement. It doesn't change business operations in a material way. What it has the potential to do is make CRA tougher to comply with, and make outstanding ratings more difficult to achieve. And that in turn works into M&A, because the regulators have been talking about putting a higher priority on CRA ratings as they consider merger applications. So if CRA enforcement becomes tougher and compliance becomes more onerous, and it makes it tougher for banks to get good ratings on CRA, that could mean that it makes their applications for approval of a merger application more difficult. I do think this is an important ruling. Again, it's a preliminary ruling. It's a stay, and there's going to be ongoing litigation. The courts have been more skeptical of agencies in recent years, deferring to them less and requiring that agencies stick to closer to the original statute than the courts have required in the past. So there's a good chance the banking industry could win this. Not a guarantee, but a good chance. But again, I think it kind of flows through to M&A, and I think that's the biggest takeaway here.
Yeah, I'm sure our friends at KBW are watching that very closely.
Our colleagues at KBW and really across the banking industry. Yep,
sure.
It's an important issue.
I think, Brian, this may have been the first podcast in, as far as I can remember, we didn't mention the presidential race not one time.
Yeah, because we're not going to talk about that for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, we got plenty. We got tons of time.
We got plenty of time for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be back for that probably in the next podcast.
I'm sure.
Your tease. You have to come back in 2 weeks because we're going to talk about the presidential race.
Well, I was laughing because I think it was last night or the other night I was watching, and I said to myself, oh my gosh, we haven't even gotten through 2024 yet, and already I've got to hear this. Someone commented that the youngest Trump son, Barron Trump, who's had an unbelievable growth spurt, they basically made the comment that if and when he ever runs for president, he would be the tallest president in history, even at this age. He's already exceeded the height of any former president.
See, now, I thought
that's what we're getting at now.
I thought you were going to go in a different direction because the NCAA is finishing up its annual tournament. The men's basketball tournament, and given that the kid is now, I think, 6'7", I thought you were going to talk about his recruiting prospects.
Yeah, well, that's possible.
Division I basketball.
That is very possible too. So I'm sure that I'm sure they will leave no stone unturned. All right, well, Brian, I guess we're out of time for today. But as always, thank you for coming on and giving us the update from Washington.
Neil, it's always great to be with you.
Same, and thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode of Potomac Perspective. Take care.